Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're following up our Carcanon's cast with a dive into kind of their most famous interaction with the Imperium, the Badab. Sorry, guys, in advance. Basically, what happened was I was doing all my research into the Carcharodons. I had to reread this story, and now I want to talk about it. So here we go.
Hold on. To be fair, you're wildly more excited about the War of Badab than you were about the Carcharodons.
This is way cooler.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I want everybody to know we're going to have some serious juice on this because John came out of nowhere and was just like, let's talk about Red Corsairs.
The origins of the Red Corsairs. Well, just the Badab Wars, we're going to get into it. We'll get into it. Anyway, 40K Lorecast, a weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. For those of you who would like the show, please comment on it and subscribe. It does help us out a lot from an algorithm standpoint, moves us up in rankings and pushes it out to more people. I know a lot of you have done it so far. I do read the comments still. We are this far in. I have now read thousands upon thousands of comments, and they are quite entertaining. So thank you for that. Additionally, if you like listening to our voices, that's on you. I mean, you want to hear more about us, you can go to our YouTube, the 40K Lorecast. There you're going to find old versions of the show that we've converted with imagery and subtitles, our quarterly live Q&A sessions, and our other shows, the History of 40K, where Brad and I discuss the history of the 40K on the tabletop, and Two Old Men and Their Handler, which is probably coming out by the time this one released. Brad had a hiccup with not turning on his microphone.
Technology is hard.
I was just so thrilled it was finally you, not me, who did that F up. Those are traditionally John screw ups. And I was like, yes, I'm not alone.
If you haven't gone to our page, go to our page at least to watch our second Q&A, which starts off with John and I bickering about how to go live while that's we're live.
That's our third. We did it two times, and then the third one still couldn't figure it out.
We don't know we're live, and we're trying to say about how we can go live and what we should do. And while the whole time, we're live. And it's totally worth watching, at least that part.
It's quite entertaining. We're not the best at this. Speaking of, if you want to help us out, we do have a Patreon link in the notes.
We can use the help.
Yeah, a lot of you have contributed already, and it really is massive. The Patreons allowed us to hire an audio engineer to balance our stuff out, get some better microphones, also invest in some more technology for pushing more content out and doing more. That's why we have more shows, is because of the Patreons allowing us to really be able to do that. So big thank you to all of you. The way our Patreon works is we have one tier, and if you sign up for it, you get the show and the show History of 40K ad-free. And it's only $4.99 American. Or if you need diplomatic immunity, it's 86.14 South African Rand. And if you don't get that reference, I'm sorry. That movie was, it was okay, but it was still good. Or more likely, you're just like,
whatever. That's awesome.
It's a great movie. Actually, it's a great movie. It's fine.
Too old for this.
But I mean, he said it a lot. I mean, the first Lethal Weapon's really good. I think the one with Chris Rock is a third one. I think that's probably their best Lethal Weapon. Was that four?
Four.
That might be four.
That was with Jet Li.
Yeah, the Jet Li one. That's the best one.
You're high.
It is. Sorry. It's the best one. Anyway, in addition, we're talking about South African Rand. I would also point out some of the best scuba diving in the world. And I'm a very avid scuba diver. You've got more my world, which is Proea Bay. Or banks, where you have hammerhead sharks, bull sharks, whites, and more. So you can really see some cool stuff. But maybe you don't like swimming with things with teeth. Then you can go up to the Sudwana, which is a really beautiful nature preserve on the land with lots of natural wildlife, monkeys, etc. Or you can go to the coral reef that's right there, where you can get, you know, your normal things, your turtles, your lionfish, mantas. If you've never seen, by the way, a manta in real life, they are an oddly big and fast creature. I've seen them in Australia. I've seen them in Fiji. I've seen them in, I think I saw them in Philippines. They are terrifying underwater, is how big they are, and they can turn on a dime. Anyway, Fun little side note.
And they've got a face on their underside.
Yeah, I actually had, I was in Fiji, and actually we were doing a dive where you jump into the current takes you backwards, and then they swim through the current because there's a bunch of krill in there and they eat, and one of them just slammed into my back. And I'll be honest, it was a surprise. I wasn't really quite ready for, because it slammed in my back and I had to go under it. And so I felt like I was being attacked by a giant ray, and I was fine. But I remember afterwards thinking that would have been the dumbest way to die of all the scuba diving I've done. Cause I've done like cage free chummed water with whites. Sure. I've done tons of shark dives and all that stuff. I really glad I didn't get taken out by a manta ray. Anyway, in addition, we do have a Discord. We always pump our Discord because our Discord's great. We're probably close to 11,000 at the time of this releasing. It's an incredible place for people looking to interact around 40K. Obviously, this show is a big piece of it. But even beyond the show, you can see lots of people coming in there for painting advice. We even have painting classes that are part of it. Coming in there for tabletop advice, TTS, really all the different elements of the game. And it's designed to be a really positive community, especially inviting for those of you who've never really interacted with the community very much. We didn't want something where there was any gatekeepers like that. Come in, you want to learn more about 40K? Awesome. There's a bunch of people here who'd love to tell you more. But with all that, let's jump into the Badab War by doing a little bit of chat about what a Space Marine chapter really is. So
they're not all created the same. They all don't adhere to the Imperial Creed the same, if at all.
Yeah, there we go. All right. So you know how the more you hear about the Imperium, the more you think it sucks? I mean, except the Lords of Terra.
You know,
no bread. They're fictional. No reason to get upset and have them throw off your heart again. Am I going to let that go? No, I'm not. Should I be concerned about the fact that two casts ago, you went into tachycardia during the cast and kept going, good? Probably. Am I just going to make fun of you for it instead of actually helping? Yeah, also that.
Also, I would like to say that the show notes having the reference to the Lords of Terra didn't make me angry, but it did. And it always will.
It is amazing.
Those fake guys piss me off.
Yeah, the people who do not exist have never existed either. Completely fictional. It's okay.
I would fight them.
The Tooth Fairy, also a concern of yours? just sneak in and take my teeth.
Nobody takes my teeth. A fighter.
Yeah, Brad Simpson. Is that the real reason you have the CPAP machine? It's so she can't get to your teeth? Anyway, all right, but with the Imperium, between the Lords of Terra, planetary governors, ecclesiastical leaders, and more, the Imperium is basically cannibalizing itself at numerous times. And so, when they get in trouble, who do they call? With demons, it's the Silver Ghostbusters, but otherwise, it's the Space Marines. But there's a hitch there. And often, when the Imperium calls the Space Marines to bail them out, they don't actually even support them or appreciate them. It's like, hey, you. Deal with this. And then the Space Marines, because they're stoked, goes, and they get it done, but no one really appreciates them. And as we said before, in addition to that, the Lords of Terra and the Space Marines don't have a great relationship.
Great relationship would be the understatement of the century, since they've murdered the Lords of Terra multiple times. Also, the Lords of Terra, as I've said before, deserve it. And they should have been killed more, but also, no one talks more smack to the Space Marines after they've just done something for them than the Lords of Terra. They're always mad about something.
It's like they're trying to neg them. It's kind of how it feels like at all times. It's just a weird relationship. I also put up, you said that they killed them at least three times, and they also put the head of the assassins in charge of them.
Yeah, that's true.
There's also that one. That one didn't go great.
He did kill all of them.
Yeah, they're in kind of what I would call a texting-only relationship where they have to talk to each other, but they really don't want to. So it's one of those. And as a result, the Space Marine chapters often find themselves just doing their own thing in the galaxy. And the rest of Imperium just accepts that, because after all, they are Space Marines. And they're not only are they super soldiers, but they're also super intelligent. And the viewpoint of most people is that whatever they're doing, it's probably good for the Imperium, and they know what they're doing. So let's just stay out of their way. But today, we're going to talk about what if they're not? What if the Space Marines are actually not up to good? And yeah, so before we get there, though, there's a key thing about Space Marines. Space Marines will often find themselves deployed in engagements with other chapters. It's a kind of a side effect of the Codex Astartes is that Manhunters are just too small to handle anything above a small engagement solo. So a lot of times you'll have multiple chapters reporting to the same event. And over time, these chapters will actually form a bond with each other.
One of the key things to talk about when we talk about Marines being deployed with each other is this is a lot of times the same chapters that get deployed because they're in the same space. They operate in the same spaces, but also they become the bond between these chapters becomes very, very strong. And you get a lot of these chapters that are just more than brothers to these other because they've been working so much together. They've been saving each other's lives. They're guarding each other's back. You've got just a powerful bond between these. And then there's others that are not.
Yeah. And this bond is, I love what you said there, because this bond is really everything. It's a galaxy full of corruption. So you really can only just trust your gut and your own eyes. Although Tekken was each there.
I was going to say, you can't even trust that because he's the master of deception and illusions.
But most of the chapters have numerous such loyalties to other chapters. In effect, turning the Space Marines kind of into Europe in the 11th and 12th centuries, because you've got not like Norman second Constantinople level, but like everyone's kind of married into each other until you get to a point like it's that Charlie Day meme where everything's just connected into itself. Like that's how some of these Space Marine loyalties are. But they do have, and it doesn't matter so long as everyone is loyal. And we're going to get to that in a bit. But the more important piece here is, what happens when you've got all these loyalties and all these alliances and a conflict occurs? And in effect, you get the War of the Roses, which is what I do believe the Badab War when the GW writers were making it. I think they're basing it off that, except instead of the House of York being upset about being denied their claim to the throne, it's them just slaughtering each other because it's chaos. Anyway, also spoiler alert on that. And spoiler alert, the Tudors defeated the Yorkists, but that was...
How is that a spoiler?
Well, I don't know if people have read this stuff. It's 500 years ago, but you know, everyone's got their reading list. I don't want to judge someone's reading list that they haven't gotten around to.
Jesus, man. You've had time. We don't need alert that.
I feel like I should always spoiler alert just in case, you know, hey, maybe someone there, we might have a listener who is just about to get into, well, what is the War of the Roses? And I just ruined it for them. You know, you still... Sorry, I'm just going to say there, straight up.
Wow.
All right, but let's open up with classic GW. All the records of the Badab War are under an edict of obliteration. So there are no records at all that this conflict exists, at least not outside the Inquisition, all Space Marine chapters that fought in it, all the local worlds in the sector, the Lords of Terra, a few others who were just passing through and wrote it down. Other than that, no records at all of this era.
Yeah, you're like 14 documentaries, two feature films.
Exactly, yeah. It comes in a free newsletter to your house. Yeah, but outside of that, no way to know about it. Ooh,
my collector, mystery. My protector wore, collector wore a Badab plates.
Yeah. all right, so the Maelstrom Zone sits within the Ultimus Segmentum, which is near the galactic core, actually, interestingly, because we're doing Votan a short while ago. And it's not very far from Segmentum Solar, and that's important because this area has been a problem for a long time for the Imperium, dating back to the Great Crusade. The forces of the Imperium, they've been trying to purge this thing of the enemies of mankind, and every time they thought they did it, the region would fall back into war and revolt. One such era is around 557 of M41, the hive world of, Signax? We'll go with Signax. Signax is this key militarized hive world.
The key word being militarized, because again, you have a bananas population because it's a hive world. It's a manufacturing hub, and it was
basically taxed, a fortress world.
Yeah, it was taxed with making weapons, so...
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty major world. It falls into civil war because you have death cultists, which are a group of people who just felt the only way to serve the emperor is to die for the emperor, but also take a bunch of people with us. They're kind of, the Eldar, the fallen of the Eldar. That's the best way to describe these group. So this whole civil war breaks up, and the Mantis Warrior chapter of the Space Marines goes to put the rebellion down. And the problem is that during this period of time, the Death Cultists also had then, because of what they were doing, actual cultists came in. The whole thing goes down, and the Death Cultists get access to the orbital weaponry and then just exterminatus themselves.
I was just about to say, they take the orbital weaponry and they spin the wheel down so the angle's going, instead of out into space, hey, that looks real flat on its trajectory. Yeah, we're shooting it at ourselves.
And they blow up their own planet. This is a big deal because the Lords of Terra have now lost one of the most important worlds out in this sector at this point. And so they declare the Maelstrom Zone, we're not putting up with this crap anymore. It's going to be actively patrolled by Space Marines. And they place multiple chapters in the region, no longer just to react for issues, but to actually hunt down and deal with them. Similar to what we see with the Death Watch, actually. It's the same setup, the Death Watch. We're going to put a fortress out there, and if you see a Xeno, kill a Xeno, but also look for the Xenos. Let's remove this situation. And originally, it's a huge success. The Space Marine chapters out there, they're able to snuff out conflicts before they get big. The flow of resources starts to kind of explode coming out of the region going back. And yay, Lords of Terra, we did a good job. But as with all things, because I think 40K sucks, once the region was producing, then the region didn't need help anymore because that's how the Imperium works. So then Maelstrom becomes a forgotten thing that we're no longer reinforcing and looking into. Around 600, so maybe like around 50 years after that moment of M41, the Astral Claws are sent out to patrol the area, the region for problems. Astral Claws are an interesting one. We don't know who they owe their lineage to. It's rumored to be Ultramarines, but also Dark Angels. I personally don't think they're Dark Angels just because the way they act. Although now that I say that and what's going to happen to them, I guess it'd be interesting if it was a Fallen, if they were a successor Dark Angel chapter that actually was made up of entirely Fallen, but they weren't, but the Fallen who didn't know they were Fallen. I don't know. Who knows? But whatever. All I know is around, they've got a founding of around 35, of around M35, and they've served the Imperium with loyalty ever since then until about 15 minutes of this story. Around 640, so 40 years into this, a conflict breaks out all over the sector. We've got Xenos, we've got chaos, normal rebellion everywhere. And it's not centralized, it's just everywhere and constant. And the Astral Claws go in to meet this full bore. But they run into a problem pretty quickly. And this is more of a problem thing a lot of us know in modern era. The old joke, what's the reward for a job well done? More work.
Yeah, I don't even think that does it justice, though, because they get more work. And I think they would have actually been okay with just more work. They get significantly more work, but they get the resources pulled from them. They get more work exactly. With less support. It's like, all right, here's some more work. And also we fired 5 people in your job.
Yeah. Effectively, the Astral Claws just keep doing a good job. And the High Lords of Terra decide, all right, well, they got this. And while in the beginning, the Astral Claws had a full fleet around them and, you know, this is all regular humans. So this is Imperial Navy, Imperial Guard, all that stuff. And High Lords of Terra say, oh, well, you guys just keep winning. Obviously, we gave you too much stuff because that makes sense. And so they pull it all away. Now the Astral Claws are looking around going, so it's just us now? This sucks. And so now, and as a result, the attrition begins to kick in. Around this same time, the Astral Claws chapter master falls in combat against the orcs. And they promote a new guy who's last name I can pronounce. First name's going to be a fun one. L-U-F-G-T. Luft. Luft. Luf. I don't know. Huron's the last name.
I'll say, spoiler alert, it's Huron Blackheart. But continue.
Yeah, exactly.
But
we're
not
going,
yet.
We're just going Huron for a while. Huron decides that his Astral Claws cannot afford any more protracted battle. And he begins a campaign of just heavy weapon deployment, just blowing up planets in effect. Everything. Planets, fleets, space stations, just absolute powerhouse hitting anything and everything that comes into play. Viewing, look, I'd rather rebuild it later than lose irreplaceable soldiers now. And one of the key worlds that comes up, though, is out there is the planet Badab, whatever, goes into revolt. It's just regular humans, though. with nothing more than a planetary defense force. And the Astral Claws just decide, all right, this one we won't blow up. We'll go down here personally. A Huron himself kills
the Imperial governor.
The misguided Imperial governor, along with all the nobility and anyone that he just decided wasn't pro-Imperium enough.
Yeah, but he also doesn't, it's not even, he does that. He goes door to door. Hey, yeah. I've got some death for you. Leave it at the door. No, stab.
It's coming in. Now, what happens then is Huron is kind of, at this stage of the story, he's just pissed off. He's pissed off at humanity. He doesn't trust them. So he's like, screw this. I'm ruling this planet. And he and the Astral Claws take control of the planet, which, by the way, is something Space Marines are allowed to do. This is not against any rules. It's just, well, it's against the guidelines is how this would fall into. So he drops that on them. And then he looks around and says, well, actually, the other planets in the area, they're kind of uppity too. And he goes and invades all the other planets in the sector and again, kills all the Imperial governors and all the nobility and takes control of the entire sector.
I mean,
of
there's a reason he was the tyrant of Badab. But also, the ironic on this, because this chapter originally was put together to guard against chaos incursions. Which is just so cool.
And like you mentioned there, what I like about it is that he's doing all this and the Lords of Terror are like, yeah, awesome. We have no notes because the resources kicked up. He starts referring to himself as the Tyrant of Badab. That's not a title given to him from others. This is Vlad Dracul all over again.
I was about to say, both of his nicknames are personally given to him. He's the Tyrant of Badab, and he also calls himself Huron Blackguard. That's not until later, but yes.
Yeah, much later, yeah. But yeah, he's a Tyrant of Badab, and everyone goes, I see no red flag.
Yeah. You're like, what did you name yourself? The Tyrant. You know, Badab, that's where I am.
I did look it up, by the way, just to compare other Space Marine titles. You also have the Flesh Terrors. That's a Space Marine chapter. The Dictators, but my personal favorite, the Terror Tigers, which just sounds, I don't know who thought that name up, but that one just sounds adorable. Yeah, we're the Terror Tigers. I just, my brain immediately goes, the play Cats. That's just what I can see they all look like. Or is it like Kiss? So it's the guy in Kiss. So it's
Ace Frehley.
He just died, didn't he?
Yes,
he did. Is he dead?
He just passed away.
Anyway, I've never listened to Kiss in my life. Like, at least, sorry, not willingly.
You don't want to party? Right. You don't want to rock and roll all night or party every day?
They're not very talented. Anyway, initially, everything's a great success. All these key worlds, the Astral Claws, are able to just basically self-reinforce. They're able to use all the resources there, turning these worlds into recruiting worlds for themselves, manufacturing hubs for military needs, and they go back on the offensive again in the sector, hunting down Xenos, pirates, chaos, etc. The enemies of mankind within the Maelstrom basically hit of the back foot, and Huron goes, all right, this is our chance. We're going to go cleanse the Maelstrom Zone. And he petitions for a declaration of a crusade to subdue the system. He's asked for multiple Space Marine chapters, along with obviously Imperial Navy, Imperial Forces, all that stuff. And the Lords of Terror go, no, you got this yourself. Why would we give you any more resources? You're doing such a good job. Have at it. And yeah.
Didn't go over super well.
Yeah, he didn't care for that because he had that piece of, so I get no resources. Yeah. By the way, welcome to John's real job. Anyway, Huron is furious and he decides to take matters into his own hands, which is when things begin to take a turn for the negative. So around 7:48 of M41, Huron decides the Badab sector that he and his chapter are running, we're going to subdue the Maelstrom with or without the Imperium support. And, but anyway, that is without, because that wasn't the Imperium.
I'd already said no. Well, let's go into some really important things about this though. This sector is wildly wealthy and well populated, and they have all of the resources you need to wage a galactic war here.
Yeah, that's a great point, because the thing is that the way the Imperium is built up, we've touched on this a few times. Yes, you've got a flow of goods going across the entirety, but they goal is to have it not do that. And so what you see is like McCraig's the best example of this. You can have sectors that are effectively completely self-sufficient. And they send some stuff out to help people out, but they themselves are totally self-sufficient. This sector is one of them, where they have all the resources they could need to feed the populace, arm themselves, raise troops, everything. So they're in a good spot.
Yeah, they have population, production, food. He's ready to go.
Yeah. However, the one key thing is all the worlds throughout the entirety of the Imperium do have to send a set amount of resources back to Terra, called the Imperial Tithe. That is, unless you're a space marine. This is a goofy little thing that is important. Under Imperial laws, there is a subparagraph somewhere within the rules that gives the rights of the Space Marine commanders in a war zone. Technically, Space Marines have the right to suspend the Imperial Tithe so as to support themselves and thus the Imperium in conflict. And this idea makes sense. The Space Marines are fighting in a sector. Why would I send goods all the way back to Terra to manufacture and send all the way back to me? That'll take 2 decades to get here. I need those supplies right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're allowed to, they can effectively just requisition local manufacturing to meet their needs. And like most of the rules, the requirements for doing this are not very clear or robust. Huron knows this. And he just goes, okay. And Huron, the true reason is he's furious with the Imperium and the Adeptus Administratum for denying his request for more resources. So he goes, all right, screw them. They're not going to assist me. I'm not assisting them back.
So he ends up being a bad guy on this, but talking about bad guys being right, he's not wrong at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. So he does. He suspends all tithe payments to the Imperium. And he does this, again, not because he's trying to build the Scrooge McDuck pool to jump into and swim their resources. This is he really does spend them well. He uses the tithe money to build fortifications all around the Bedazzled sector.
The rest of the Imperium is going to find out, soon enough, that he did a great job of fortifying the Bedab sector.
Yes. He builds what becomes known as the Ring of Steel, which is a ring of satellites and defenses all over the sector, making the sector unassailable.
How about it's not even just, you made it small, like there was this little space station with a gun. There's floating space stations of doom all over the place. Like things have real. When we did one of our original casts talking about the Siege of Terra, going through the Sol system, he's making this in the Bedab sector.
100%. But he's not done. Aside from seizing the Imperial tides going out, he also shuts down all trade coming in and out of the system. So only trade happens inside the system. Because this region was very, very wealthy. And so a lot of other regions relied on the goods from his region to go support them. Now, his viewpoint was, those regions aren't helping me. Because a lot of those regions, by the way, are outside of Maelstrom. So he also cut them off. This way, he had even more resources to deploy and grow his military and do this stuff. And remember, the sector's doing well at this point. Rebellions are down. And when issues did arise, they're quick to put down. Well, so even though the Imperium...
I was saying, he's giving a quick thing on this. The people that really wanted to trade with other sectors and do stuff were very wealthy men and corporations that are doing stuff. And he's just murdering them anytime they talk any squabble at all.
Yeah. Now
I have an opposing opinion. Stab.
Yeah. But let's talk about one group and where this thing starts to fall apart. So there's a group called the Carthago Trade Lords. And Carthago is a system outside of Maelstrom, right outside of it. And we covered during our Fleets of the Imperium casts. Merchant fleets are the overwhelming majority of all spacecraft, but as you would expect it would be. And these merchant fleets are run by these incredibly powerful families that hold warrants of trade and for a set part of the galaxy. And the way these families get wealthy is they get a percentage of all the trade that goes on through their fleets. And therein lies the problem here. Because if a world or system or sector over which the fleet holds a warrant of trade stops producing, the merchant fleet itself loses the income, and which happens a lot, obviously, because regions get destroyed, you have war, you have all this stuff. But if that happens enough, the family can't move their warrant of trade, so they just become poor and destitute. So they're not big fans of trade being turned off because they can't get it elsewhere. And the Carthago trade lords had the Imperial tithe that was coming through the Badab sector was theirs to collect. Even more interesting is that the way imperial tithes work is you don't pay your imperial tithe directly to the Imperium, as opposed to like the black ships. They come up, you give them your psychers, those are back to the Imperium. The imperial tithe is actually collected by these trade groups. And so what happens is, if you think about it this way, if I'm maintaining all the trade for a sector, then the Imperium tells me this is how much money I have to give the Imperium. Okay? Based on it. So if all of a sudden I don't get trade, I still have to give the same amount of money back.
Sounds like a this mob thing as we talk about it.
Oh, yeah. This is the scene from Goodfellas. Like 100%. Like, that's what this
is. I really don't care what's happening. You still owe me money.
Yes. So when the Badab sector halted all trade and imperial tithes, the administratum was not looking at Huron to pay it. They were looking at the Cathagos. And that's not ideal for them. So the Cathago trade lords have to figure out what they're going to do next. And they are, at this stage, one of the wealthiest trading groups in the entire galaxy due to what they'd had. And they're watching their coffers begin to diminish because this trade isn't happening. Now, this gets a little bit ugly.
Hold on, though. Let's back it up, though, because they originally thought this is a great idea because they are making money hand over fist in the beginning.
That is very true. Yeah, that is very true. And yeah, initially, you did have this great deal because Huron comes in there and all the trade goes up in the sector because all the conflict goes down. So they're making even more money. And then it went the opposite direction. Now they're making almost no money. And so their governor, Satrap Tanik Konig, freaks out. And she has a problem, though. She's a trade group. They have a militia. They've got a fleet. But that's for pirates and worker rebellions and maybe some planetary governors. This is a space marine chapter that's telling her, no, we're not giving you your money.
And it's also a space marine chapter plus, because they've been increasing, check all boxes. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything so they have.
Yeah, she's left with asking politely, and she did that, and Huron didn't respond politely. So she begins petitioning the Adeptus Administratum to get involved, and they ignore her because their viewpoint is this is a local issue. Cathago trade lords have to figure this out, and if you can't, we'll put someone in there who can. So basically, cover the loss, go away. Now, there is one other piece of the imperial tithe that we have never spoken about before. Sorry about that, guys.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
The countdown is on. Holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go and buy Fart Bingo? Yeah. Is it for my kid and his friends? Meh. At the same time, I also got a cocktail smoker. So actually, yeah, those are all for me. But that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have an uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items for your holiday season. Additionally, holidays get expensive. Uncommon Goods is not some super high-cost independent store, which is code for overpriced. Rather, they have a great collection of gifts you can get at a low cost without looking like cheap garbage. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Every chapter within the entire Space Marines have to provide a small portion of their gene seed back to the Mechanicum. And this is done to both create supply and, in my opinion, keep an eye on it.
100%.
So, yeah, like you had the Emperor's Children had a fiasco where a bunch of their gene seed was lost because Trazen stole it. That's what happened. And then you had an incident in the War of the Beast where the Imperial Fists stopped existing. Just simply put, they all died. So they were remade with a combination of successor chapters, but every Imperial Fist died. So there's that. In order to combat this, the Mechanicum store a large amount of gene seed from all of the chapters. This way, should a chapter reach near extinction, they could, from combat fatigue, they could actually be revived. And in addition, this is how the Primaris project worked. How you're able to show up with, oh, hey, I've got a bunch of not just Ultramarines, but like I have Crimson Fists. There you go. I got, you want them? Now, my theory is also, I think the Mechanicum's watching the gene seeds and making sure they don't.
100,000%.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what a lot, this is the real reason behind this. So this way they can see what's going on. So why are we talking about this? Well, Huron also cut that off. He stopped sending that. And this is really important for what's going to happen. The real reason why we'll reveal actually in our next cast, but well before Huron, which I'm really hoping is pronounced Huron, not Huron, but who cares anymore. But well before he stops providing the Imperial Tide, he cuts off the gene seed supply. And initially, this is fine and expected. The Astral Claws are heavily engaged in combat, but they have recruiting worlds that they're local to. So they really can't afford to send gene seed back to Mars because they need to use it to bring up new recruits because they're in an active war zone. So the Mechanicum originally just goes, all right, well, whatever. But then after like 50 years of not a single gene seed shipment, the Mechanicum start going like, hey, what's going on here? Anyway, now we're going to jump around a little bit here. While the Mechanicum and the Carthago trade lords are complaining and whining, the Astral Claws are genuinely very busy fighting the enemies of mankind.
Those are kicking a lot of ass, let's be honest.
Oh, hardcore.
Let's give them props. They are the bad guys, but...
They become the bad guys. That's why we're not there yet. They're still the good guys at this point.
I'm just saying that they are. They're wrecking shop at this point in time.
Yeah. And not just also even in their own sector. So from 775 to 780 of M41, you get something called the Four Quadrant Rebellion. This stretches into not Sol itself, but the solar, Segmentum Solar, and spreads obviously out to Maelstrom, which is all for no one knows the reason, but dozens, could even be 100 worlds go into rebellion. These are all planetary governors, turn their back on the Imperium, declaring themselves independent. Obviously, over time, you get some chaos cults popping up, and this... These simple like rebellions, it's these little brush fires all over the place, all have to be put out and turned into really, but a lot of them turn into pretty serious conflicts.
They're all happening at the same time.
Exactly. The Astral Claws are one of the chapters that responds to this. And when they do so, because they're leaving Maelstrom behind, also doing work inside Maelstrom, they make a bunch of friends with some other chapters because the Astral Claws are a very good fighting force. Very, very, very good. As the Quadrant War begins to ebb, Maelstrom itself then catches fire again. You have an Orc Waz, the first one that comes in. The Claws put it down.
Hold on. The Claws put it down because Huron stabbed the Orc boss in his face.
Yeah, that was a good move. Then you get a bunch of other problems, a bunch of Xenos incursions, some chaos things. But this time, because Maelstrom's getting so uppity, and partly because of what the Claws did during the Quadrant Rebellion, the Black Templars show up. And the Black Templars look around, see all the devastation throughout Maelstrom, and say, yep, it's crusade time. And they decide to go on what's called a Crusade of Wrath. Now, a Crusade of Wrath is important, because a Crusade of Wrath isn't a crusade of conquest. So there's no, oh, we're going to conquer these worlds for the Imperium. No, this is a, you wronged me, I'm going to go punch you in your dick.
Yeah, they have, we're smoke showing any, I want everybody to raise their hand that was talking shit, because we're killing all of those.
Yeah.
All of them.
So and this is really important what happens next. So the Black Templars arrive, obviously, and they call in for support. And the support comes in the sense of the Lamenters, who are Blood Angel's successor, the Mantis Warriors, a White Scar successor, both join in. And within a couple years, 23 worlds are purged of Xenos and heretics. Huron is on cloud 9 because it's working. I'm cleansing.
What he was trying to do in the first place. Now he's got support.
Yeah. While this is occurring, though, actually, before this occurred, you had the first Tyrannic War go on. But now we're seeing Tyranids popping. We're also now getting pretty far into the Necron Tomb World Awakening. Tau are doing their thing. Stuff's getting ugly in the Imperium. And so the Lords of Terror reach out to the Black Templars and say, yeah, you guys have had your fun in Maelstrom. I need you to come home now. And they just go, okay. And they leave. And all of a sudden, Huron's left looking around and everyone's gone. Abaddon's starting to come out of the
13th. Yeah, 13 Crusades about to start. But let's also talk. It's not like the Templars just lost. They left a huge amount of Imperial support, the Navy support things, everything else.
And that's it. So at this stage, his dream is over. That's the whole thing here. He's made some allies, he's made some friends, but not enough. And without a full support of the Imperium, you're not going to pull off a crusade in the Maelstrom sector. So what's written is that he kind of goes back and he just enters like solitude, either just not speaking to anyone or staring off into the distance for a while. I'll do the spoiler alert. He'd been corrupted by chaos. That's what had happened at this point. We don't know this yet. We're not going to know this for till next cast. But at this stage, he'd been corrupted. No one knows how. Well, no one knows why.
What do you mean? Do you want to know why? Because of the fact that we pushed him to chaos. This is one of those ones where, yes, is he the bad guy? 100%. Could this have been stopped? Yes. He was fervently loyal for a long time.
Yeah. But let's get to our flashpoint now. So while all this is going on, the Adeptus Mechanicus and the Carthaginian trade lords had been effectively suing the Astral Claws back in court on Terra, the best way to explain it. And finally, the Imperium just goes here and gives them a writ, allowing them to go and collect their tithe. The problem they have is that they're about to go to a Space Marine chapter and tell them to comply against their will. So you don't do that solo. They enter the sector with a tithe fleet, Mechanicus ships, and three Imperial cruisers. And I love this part of the story. They arrive on the edge and radio in.
Pause on this, though. Let's set up who you're about to talk to. You just have a guy that's not only just being corrupt by chaos, it's because he's had this complete and total crisis of faith on being let down by the thing that is supposed to be the most valuable to me, the honor, you know, honor of the Imperium, what we're trying to do with the thing. He's just had that break. And then this happens.
Yeah. And then the tax man shows up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, they arrive on the edge of the fleet and notify their intentions. And Huron tells them to hold at the edge of space. And I don't think it was hold like, hey, hold on, we'll be right there. I think it was more of a go away. And in response, the Tithe fleet decides to go and take their money by going full speed towards Badeb. Fun story on that. Remember a short while ago when we mentioned how Huron had built the Ring of Steel? Driving yourself headfirst into said Ring of Steel didn't go well. Every single ship that got destroyed instantly.
Just wrecked it. I don't think anybody got the memo that they had upgraded security.
I think probably could see it. That's why I find that funny. I think they're probably looking at it. The part that's really funny to me is Huron's next move is actually really clever. He sends a note to Administratum demanding an apology from them.
Which, by the way, that's such a bold move on that.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted them to apologize for him blowing up all their ships because, as he says, they arrived, we told them to hold, they took up an offensive position and moved towards us aggressively, so we had no choice but to kill them. Which is, in effect, the South Park, they're coming right for us defense. What? And let's just say the Carthaginians felt differently about what had occurred there. What helps Huron out, though, is this is right about the time the whole galaxy is turning into a dumpster fire. There's threats all over the place. The Tyranid, more Tyranid high
fleets. Multiple high fleets. Necrons are awakening.
Yeah.
13th this Crusade. Is getting, yeah, shit's this going is
really
down.
Getting ugly. And so with all these real threats, this thing gets labeled as a just trade group complaining about getting stiffed on a bill by Space Marines. And the overall viewpoint of the Imperium is, I can make more trade lords. It's hard to make more Space Marines. How about you guys just settle this amongst yourselves? Go away. The Carthaginians decide to take that message. And instead of taking the hint of, hey man, shut up and let this one go, they go, no, I've got a much better idea.
My God, these guys first, are such scrubs. Well, let's talk about it. First, they try to invade twice.
Yeah.
And that went super great. I mean, if you consider big first round. I would say it's a first round knockout, but I actually think they got hit on the way to the ring.
Yeah, I was going to say no. They tripped walking towards the ring and hit the, and did the $1 million baby on the way down. Yeah, that's how this actually went. Oh, God. So then they move into phase two, which is just talking shit behind their backs. They begin a propaganda campaign against the Astral Claws, just complaining about them to everybody. Now, things are getting worse for them, though, as a result of this, because during this era, they find themselves under assault. The Carthagians find themselves under assault from pirates. There's just this massive pirate fleet all over the place, bothering the hell out of them. In fact, Huron blames said pirate fleet on the missing ships that were sent to attack him, which the Carthagians obviously knew, yeah, that's not what happened. So much like Europe, this is now, we're now basically in the Badab sector. It's Europe 1914. We've got Astral Claws and two other Space Marine chapters are just sitting within Maelstrom because the Black Templars and much of, they all left. So it's now the Lamenters and the Mantis Warriors are having the same problem the Astral Claws are, which is, hey, we have no support and we're constantly under assault. And they also feel abandoned by the Imperium. And as the Claws are engaging with the Carthagian trade lords in this like little shadow war, Huron approaches the Lamenters and the Mantis Warriors, and he says to them, look, I've had enough. If the Imperium's not going to support us in our fight, why should we support that? So he draws up something that are called the Articles of Just Secession, and this is really critical difference. They are not seceding from the Imperium, because if they did so, that would truly be heresy. They're seceding from providing an Imperial tithe. So that they, under the justification that this way they could prosecute the war within the maelstrom that they needed to.
Also, the Lamenters. This is the ultimate rules as written of all time.
Oh, yeah. We're not seceding. We're just not going to pay you. But it's okay because we're going to take the money we're not paying you. We're going to spend to fight a war that you would support. So we're okay, right?
Yeah. Like so much no.
Yeah. The Lamenters and the Mantis Warriors agree with this and they both sign on. By the way, I don't know if this document got sent anywhere. It may have just been signed and shoved in a drawer. I don't think it got sent back to
I think, and also he pulls them together to just kind of go, hey, we're going to keep fighting in this area, right? Yes. All right, keep fighting. Okay. Yeah. It's just like, all right.
And everyone's like, no, that works for me. But now we're going to get to the ugly bit, which is the outbreak of war. So in the grand campaign of complaining, the Carthaginians finally found someone who would listen. They complained to literally every member that they could ever find. And they found, and basically all the human forces were like, yeah, man, I'm not attacking Space Marines. Like, just that's not happening. So they had to find a Space Marine chapter. And they found one in the Firehawks.
I barely can't talk, but I got excited because the Firehawks do look cool model-wise.
They look really cool, and they've got a cool story. The Firehawks are badass. They are extreme loyalists, but they're Bradley's that like to pretend his salamanders are the good guys. The Firehawks actually have a much more noble history than a lot of other Space Marine chapters. They are a former Ultramarine successor, which explains why they're so good. Although there are questions about like their founding, because they claim to be Ultramarines, and the Ultramarines are like, yeah, we don't have a record of you guys. Yeah.
I have no idea who these guys are.
Yeah, and by the way, we're the Ultramarines. We write stuff down.
Yeah, nobody keeps track of shit better than we keep track of shit.
Yeah. The Firehawks are interesting because they're a fully fleet-based chapter. And this is because in the wars against Ghosh Vandir, where you had the whole Ecclesiarchy was fighting each other, their homeworld got demolished by Vandir's forces. And this is one of the Space Marines that Vandir actually fought against. So they got moved to being a fully mobile fleet-based group. And because of this, though, because they're fleet-based, they have to do a lot of trade. And the Carthagians are one of the largest trade organizations in the galaxy, but especially in this sector. So there's a long history between the Firehawks and the Carthagians. After enough complaining, the Firehawks say, all right, what happened? And the Carthagians tell them, well, we had these two fleets, and they were over near Badab, and they went missing, and the fleets were too big for pirates to take them out. Can someone figure out what's going on? And the Firehawks are like, fine, we'll go see what's going on. They don't think there's rebellion.
Well, they didn't say we're going to fight against anybody. They said, we'll fight. We'll find the fleets.
Yeah. And the first area they go to is the Endymion cluster. And we're about to have
Endymion.
All right, fine. The Endymion cluster. Effectively, this is Gavrilo Princip. These guys, the road was blocked, turned down the wrong road, and Gavrilo is standing right there looking right at Archduke. So they warp into the system, and the Mantis Warriors control this area. And the Mantis Warriors say, "Who the hell are you?" And the Firehawks say, "We're the Firehawks." And the Mantis Warriors say, "Cool, why are you here?" And the Firehawks come back with, "We're not saying."
Mantis, you have to get the meme out. And the Mantis Warriors took offense to that.
Yeah. The Mantis Warriors say, "Well, you are going to tell us now." Again, no. So the Mantis Warriors attack. And they disable their ships. And again, Space Marines, by the way, can do this. They basically shot the engines and turned the weapon systems off. And then they boarded the ship. And they got on the ship and said, "Okay, we're here now. Surrender." And the Firehawks surrendered by giving them a middle finger, as in not surrendering at all. And a giant conflict breaks out. And the Mantis Warriors kill most all of the Firehawks on the ship. Once this is done, that's kind of game, guys.
Firehawks decide they're going to bring the pain. So they bring their entire fleet into the sector.
Yeah, they decide they're going to crush the Mantis Warriors and any of their allies. Problem is, this is not a good idea. And this is not a good idea because this is one chapter, a mobile fleet-based chapter, which we discussed with the Carcharodons, we've discussed before. They're not as well reinforced as, one who has a homeworld they can recruit from, steady flows of supplies. And it's one against three. So that's also not ideal. And the Firehawks very quickly find themselves on the defensive and then actually being chased. The Carthagons, by the way, at this point are totally useless. They were like, "Oh yeah, these guys got it." They had a couple fleets. They got wrecked. They were just of no help. So the Firehawks put out a distress call. And now the Marines Errant, another Ultramarine chapter. This is how GW writing will be. If they're, there's a bunch of Ultramarines, they're going to be on the side of good. These guys show up. And now it's 2-3, at least at first.
So the executioners show up 15 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, so it's 2-3, and then the executioners who have a blood-like alliance with the Claws, and executioners are an Imperial Fist successor, but they've got a blood relationship or whatever, the blood oath to the Claws, so they show up. So now it's June, it's 1914.
What happened then?
bad things. So we now have a full-blown war. We've got two Space Marine chapters fighting four Space Marine chapters in an area of Imperial space. Everyone is a loyalist, by the way. This is a true loyalist civil war. There's no hints of corruption. Cough, cough, yet. So we have Astartes on Astartes civil war. Terra has a problem now. They have to get involved. This cannot happen. And the first part of the story that they do is cool, and the second part is actually funny and cool. So the first thing is they gather a force to go put this down. They grab the Red Scorpions, unknown founding chapter. Pretty cool history, actually. The Raptors, Raven Guard, Salamanders, obviously, and then Fire Angels, another Ultramarine. And yeah, they say, "All right, get out there, stop this, turn this off now." But they have a problem. And this is the part two, which gets funny. Terra cannot afford a civil war among Space Marines. So this entire thing needs to be covered up, is the wrong word, but it needs to not be a Space Marine on Space Marine civil war. It has to be a misunderstanding and misplaced loyalties.
This makes me so happy. I need to yell about this.
Someone has to be at fault.
You know who's at fault? They're Carpathian trade lords. Screw them. Yes. This is all their fault. You're like, what?
It is hilarious. So this occurs. This doesn't occur after. So while that group of Space Marine chapters are heading out to the Badab sector to deal with it, back on Terra, they have, I don't know, a tribunal, whatever term you want to use for this, and they put the Carpathians on trial and determine that they did everything wrong here. This entire thing is their fault, and we're going to go solve it, but just so everyone knows, it's entirely their fault. And their punishment for it is they're stripped of all of their trade titles. And then we talked about slavery in our last cast. They then sentenced the largest planet to 6 generations of indentured servitude to the Imperium.
A planet, the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole planet. Every member of that planet is now, for the next 6 generations, an indentured servant to the Imperium. Now, with that, we're going to break. I know it's a little bit of a shorter cast today, but we're going to break because the next piece of this kind of explodes. We're going to get into this pretty in earnest as this becomes a full-blown civil war, namely the real reasons behind it, and the return of our buddies, the Carcharodons.
Space sharks.
Yeah, they have a big role to play in this one because this is actually how they were introduced to the game. Not to mention kind of the legacy of this war has in the Imperium going forward with some more changes the Imperium has to make. The Badab sector is pretty cool. I like this conflict a lot. So with that, John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you all next week.